It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
I totally had a thing for this, like 2 days ago or something.
2 days ago? Well, that's not very handy right now.
No, I was sick for...
Is this thing on?
It should be. I flipped the... Yeah, see the thing? Did it?
None of the lights are... No,
oh,
nothing.
We suck?
Well, there, no, here we go. There it's going.
Hello! Hello!
Usually the other lights are going too, not just the red power light.
Oh. That probably means it's ruined. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast that was pitched as a Harvey Keitel, Terrence Stamp, buddy cop comedy a long time back. It's kind of a shame because I would watch the shit out of that.
Oh, yeah, that'd be good.
But it was just a trick, and we ended up with this. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 364.
Although, actually, the only thing better than having had a Harvey Keitel, Terrence Stamp, buddy cop movie back in the past would be to have one now.
Now, yeah
like exactly. I want to see them like now.
Now would be.
Speaking of which, do you think you might watch Trust?
I don't know what that is.
It's a thing that FX is doing. It appears to be like an organized crime family drama, but set back like in the 70s. It appears to be Godfather. Is what I'm saying. No, it's not that. Donald Sutherland is in it, and it's something where like a long lost son comes back and gets involved, and then hijinks into.
Oh.
And normally, that shit looks dark as hell, and I don't watch it. Most shows like that, but in theory, I don't dislike, you know, crime dramas. I don't like the icky stuff about the crime dramas. And this feels like it could be closer. And also, because Donald Sutherland is involved, I feel like it's really, like, probably a self-contained deal, which is always appealing to me.
I mean, I didn't know what it was till you described it, and I'm no more interested in it than when I didn't know what it was.
Yeah, they're pushing it pretty hard. New Atlanta starts tonight. Very excited. The other night, I was looking for something to watch, and I discovered something.
What's that?
Netflix has a bajillion TV shows I've never heard of.
Yeah, they sure do.
They're making a bunch, including in other countries. It was weird. I saw something that said, like, a new Netflix original film, but it was in German.
Yeah.
So that was confusing.
Yeah.
For a split second. But also, like, older shows, they seem to have imported suddenly a lot of old British shows, I think.
Oh.
Not, like, Brit comedies, but just shows, like, hour-long dramas and stuff that. Yeah. And I'm like, somewhere in there has to be something worth watching.
Probably.
Because we're kind of, I mean, things are all starting up again, but we are kind of out of things right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing Lucifer, Portlandia is just about to be done, which, I mean, I have to say this. Apologies to Fred Armisen and Carrie Brownstein and all the wonderful things they've done. That show, I'm glad this is the last season. They are out of ideas. It's mostly just Fred Armisen saying nonsense loudly. Like, they are out of ideas. But yeah, we got that, and then, like, This Is Not Happening is here. But they're all things that, like, have a six-episode season or something. So, I've been thinking about other things we could watch. I'm also thinking, I'm going back to the gym, or at least I managed it one day this week, but I really am going back to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I finally have decided I could watch stuff, like take my tablet and watch stuff while I'm on the treadmill.
Mm.
The problem is most of the things I want to watch, I already know for a fact would not be good for other people to observe in the gym. And I'm hoping my only real saving grace is, how about Bates Motel?
For the most part, it'd be fine.
Yeah, because I think I may go with that then. Because
I mean, even the scenes that are rough are not like explicit, really.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Is accidentally showing. Nobody's gonna hear anything.
Yeah.
And it's mostly just accident. If I'm showing boobs and stuff, yeah, that feels weird. Like that. And given my other two ones I want to watch right now are Altered Carbon and Black Sails, I'm like, yeah, I'm screwed.
Yeah. No.
But I was like, it's basic cable. I'll bet we're okay. Because, yeah, the language or whatever won't bother anybody because they won't hear it. And people ignore violence. So, yeah, then I may start doing that. Trish swears by meaningless action films with a lot of spectacles. She's like, something for your eyes to focus on, but you don't really have to think about it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's why she loved Pacific Rim. Because she was watching it at the gym.
Yeah, that pretty much qualifies.
For those of you just joining us, here's how the show works. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves, cool people, people wearing Batman gear sometimes.
Yep.
I was going to say, call that email address. Write that email address with little note cards. Write that email address with little notes, comments, topics, things like that.
Brief.
Sometimes they fail at that, but they are punished for it. The hat, all on its own, we'll get to that in a minute. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. Its electropop-fueled servants...
Yep, I listened to it all the way over.
Draw there. The note cards out of the hat, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored. Do that for about an hour. That's the whole show. I just got into an electropop duo, and one night at like 1 a.m, I'm texting the video to people, and one of my friends who I'm like, oh, she's a big music person. She's like, yeah, that's gonna be awesome the next time I throw a raging kegger in my apartment. I see you were looking at something.
A book.
Oh, a book. Oh, damn. I thought you were looking at a pistachio pedestal.
That's what that is?
That's what's in there.
I don't know what that is either. I was looking, trying to figure out what the title of the book was without disturbing it.
What does it say? That'll help.
Boundary Waters?
Oh, yeah. It's I think it's a mystery series.
Oh.
My mom. So... Trish went to the Boundary Waters with her sister a couple summers ago. They went on a canoeing trip.
To what Boundary Waters?
North of here. They went out of Ely, Minnesota. It's a big, elaborate set of lakes and streams and stuff.
Oh, I know what you're talking about now.
Generally called the Boundary Waters.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Well, and also we talked about it a lot at the time because we had podcasts.
Right.
But so my mother, always eager to connect with her daughter-in-law, was like, I know those. I read some books about those. And it turns out there's a mystery author that writes one set there. And so mom thinks it's a cool way to connect, so she gave them to Trish. I don't think Trish has read them yet.
That's nice.
I thought I'd talk to you about the pistachio pedestal.
I mean, maybe you did. You talked to me about the Boundary Waters. There I forgot go. About That's that.
True. Pistachio pedestal was one of the gifts from... my parents for Christmas. Trish and I spent a good week and a half just making up our own infomercial bits about it and constantly, you know, saying there must be a better way. I took it to New Year's
there must be a better
and
way.
Every time people show up, I'm like, do you have this problem? You've just eaten a small handful of pistachios, but what do you do with the shells? Isn't there a better way? As said every single person. The pistachio pedestal. An answer to a problem no one ever had. The base is a dugout area with a little bit sticking up in sort of a square shape, which affixes the tray, the small square tray, into it just above. So you put your pistachios in the little tray, and then the shells go into the thing underneath.
You might find this hard to believe, but my wife and I actually eat pistachios quite frequently, and we do often run into the problem of we've got shells just sitting wherever.
Ooh.
Something like this would actually be very nice.
You know what also helps? Because I eat a lot of pistachios as well. A frickin' bowl.
Which is what we generally end up with. But see, what will happen is we'll be watching television or something. The bag of pistachios will be there. No one wants
put
to
it there.
Go up and get a bowl. So we just
put it in the kitchen. So to get them that you have to go there.
That's true. That's true. We could do that. But
no, Trish ate some in the car a week or two before, and she was cleaning out the car, and she just said, so there's pistachio shells out in our yard right now. And I'm like, come on! We have the pistachio pedestal! What the hell? But yeah, we thought it was hilarious. We took it to New Year's, and I asked everybody when they came in about that. And it also, this is the, I mean, other than the fact that bowls exist, you also could just have a designated bowl that sits in there with the bag of pistachios.
Sure, which, again, we do things like that, but this is handier. It's like, everything's self-contained.
If you say so. All right. Maybe I'll let you try it out for a while, see if you need one in your house. In addition to the fact that it forgets bowls exist, or wastebaskets, or so many places, it also assumes, based on the storyline through the instructions and stuff, yes, there's instructions, that you just eat one or two pistachios at a time, which I'm like, no human being has ever done that.
No.
They're nature's Lay's potato chips.
Basically.
Like, I get annoyed. Like, until recently, you couldn't get shelled ones. And that annoyed me because opening them took too long. Like, sometimes I open several at once.
Yeah, then
so
my
I can
fingers
do,
hurt after a while.
Yes, and I was like, this is too little meat for, like, because they're wonderful. I don't complain like that with, like, peanuts or whatever.
Right.
So it's great. Yeah, I'll just have two or three. In fact, I left it there with it. It holds 4 ounces, and I had a bag of 8 ounces, and I poured the first half. And I came back the next week because I forgot it was there, and they're like, oh, yeah, we owe you. We totally ate the remaining 4 ounces, just the two of them. And I'm like, of course you did. It's freaking pistachios.
Well, when you eat pistachios often, you do find ways to handle the shells and stuff, just like what you're saying. But
like every other piece of trash.
But this is one contained thing. See, to me, this is very American. Right?
I'll agree with you on that.
Like you don't, like you say, you don't really need it. You find other alternatives. And if you saw it in the store, you probably wouldn't buy it for yourself because you'd think that very thing. You'd think, I'm not going to buy this thing because I can just do this. But if someone buys it for you, that's kind
of
cool.
We did use it, and it is gorgeous. I will admit, if you're one of those
people...
It's
attractive, too.
It's a very nice green color around the edge, and the rest of it's just raw. You can open it up if you want to take a look.
Can I?
Yeah. It's easy to open and stuff.
I think I'd like to look at it.
It's very nice looking, and so if you want to be decorative for a party, that's why we knew. Like, as soon as we opened it, we're like, we're taking this to New Year's. It's nice. It's just, yeah, for an answer to a question no one asked, you know?
Well, but I mean, it wouldn't have to just be pistachios either.
I think it does. I think it's especially because of the color on the edge.
Well,
I think it's required. I think it is what we call a unitasker.
So you put the.
There's got to be a simpler way.
You drop the shells in.
You drop the shells in there, and you eat the things out of there, and then when you're done, you can just lift it off.
But another thing I mean by it's American is it's very simple. It's not complicated, but it's something that, again, if you eat pistachios a lot, you might look at this and go, I actually would like one of these things. I mean, as silly as it might sound on the surface, and as simple as the solution that you usually come up with your own bowls or trash bags or whatever you've got, it's like, this looks nice. You know, it, I don't know.
You want me to get you one of those for Christmas,
no,
don't you?
No, I'm just saying
you're angling for a pistachio pedestal.
This stuff like this is what is, you know, if I list the things I like about America, this is one of those things. I think this is really cool that someone came up with this. It's wood. It's very simple. It's very straightforward. And yet, like you said, it's not meeting some big super need or anything, but it is something that certain people would look at and go, hey, yeah, that's pretty cool. I think I would like that.
I really tried not to do this tonight, but our kitchen is unfunctional at the moment.
How are you?
Have a good evening.
Trade your food, dear.
But your opinion is the thing's just stupid.
I think it's funny. Church, he's absolutely in love with the that's it.
I think it's
with
neat.
The pistachio pedestal.
I think it's very cool.
I think we have to get him one for Christmas.
You're not impressed with it either, Trish. The pistachio pedestal.
If I was gonna eat pistachios, I would not take the time to locate the pistachio pedestal, get it out, set it up. I would just eat the pistachio.
There is that.
Yeah.
But see, if we get a bag, we usually have it sitting, like, we've got one of those sectional couches with a thing in the middle.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So we'll just have the bag sitting there. So we also have, like, a tray table sitting there where we put things, so we would just have it sitting there all the time, probably.
The mirror for Coke and
yeah.
The crack pipe.
Good, no. But we probably just have it there all the time.
We have a rule. You can't have crack unless you're willing to go to the kitchen to get the crack pipe. If you're too lazy for that, you don't need crack.
Yeah, now all they need is to sell it with something that'll help you, you know, crack the shell open without hurting your fingers.
Yeah.
Man, that hurts after a while.
At least they don't have the red dye on them anymore.
Red dye?
Yeah, it used to be the pistachios always came dyed red for some reason, so your fingers would also get all red.
Oh, I don't know.
And you can
that.
Still find there are some brands, if you get like a small pack of them in a convenience store, that are still red. I don't remember around. Why.
Why didn't I? Oh, because it's.
I think you have to flip it
around.
I left
around. The thing on top, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's pretty cool.
Well, you got one. Maybe you start the Facebook page. What am I saying? It has one.
Do they make anything else?
I don't know. This feels to me like the kind of product that resulted from somebody finally getting up the gumption to call that invention exchange thing with the commercial with the caveman. It feels like that.
Made in Dorset, Vermont.
Oh, all right. So it's a hipster pistachio bowl, basically.
I guess. But I mean,
it cracks me up.
If you were entertaining, it would be nice to have.
We did it at New Year's. We never entertain, but they do for us.
Yeah.
To entertain us.
So that would be nice.
You've sold me. I'll keep it. We'll come back to this in a year.
Again, that's something I like about America. You know, ingenuity on little things like that. It's not like it's going to change the world or anything.
John Oliver used to have a whole bit about this. And you talk about the inflatable barbecue, and the big one at the time was the Jimmy Dean's microwavable. It's like a corn dog, but it was blueberry or chocolate chip pancake instead of corn batter, and the inside is breakfast sausage. These are a real thing. You can see them in the store. And he was talking about, like, America just will go out and do anything regardless of whether or not it makes any sense or is a good idea.
I just love that. And especially if it's not a big corporation doing it, but if it's some person somewhere came up with this, they put it together, and, you know, like, they're not going to be billionaires, but, you know, maybe it lets them quit their day job. That's awesome. I mean, I love that. That's the kind of thing. I love it. And that's just a cool little thing. It's a simple idea, and like you said, most people might think it's silly or whatever, but we'd use it for sure.
I'm going to make a hand carved old growth wood Sharps disposal box.
Okay.
I have the little, you know,
well,
thing that twists so nobody can get hurt.
Diabetics use sharp boxes or sharp disposal boxes. Why shouldn't they have a nice one?
I don't know why. This makes no sense to me, but I have weird, I guess you'd say, scary associations with a Sharps box, and it's not an experience I had or whatever, but it's usually in hospitals, and I know that it's just like full of needles and stuff like that, and that weirds me out, and consequently it was very jarring when I saw one in a bathroom in Disney World. Like, and don't get me wrong, Disney World bathrooms are kind of jarring to begin with. They vary heavily in quality. Also, they all have the exact same liquid soap, But I swear, different bathrooms have different toilet paper in Disney World. Mm. It was weird. Like, some was nicer than that. Like, it was all over the place. It was very strange. But yeah, something about seeing a Sharps container in there, like, was very just weird to me. I think in my head, it's one of those phobia things. Like, I imagine, like, sticking your hand in there and coming out with, like, 30 needles
stuck
to you.
Do you think that the number of diabetics in the United States has reached a point now where there's actually a market for, I don't know, luxury goods for diabetics, accessories?
Oh, I'm sure. I am sure there are luxury glucosameters.
But I mean, even
but it's
like
hard to say. The problem is
luxury bags that carry your thing, or luxury boxes that hold your Sharps.
The problem is, and this is something I was just thinking about recently. There is a correlation between wealth and general easy health stuff. When you get rich enough, you can pay someone to keep you on a schedule for a while, or you can pay someone for liposuction, things like that. And so I feel like having that kind of wealth makes it easier to control your diabetes, and therefore there's less of that. But that's mostly out of my butt. I've seen before. I was just noticing this recently because I was watching one of those then and now kind of things with celebrities, and the vast majority of them were much thinner than they used to be. And I thought about that, and I'm like, well, some of that is if they just get plastic surgery. But I was like, also, when you have $1 million a week, you can hire somebody to make you healthy food that tastes good, or you can hire a personal trainer, stuff like that.
Coach, right?
So I was like, and so I'm wondering the same sort of thing, but I'm sure it exists because it is so common.
That's interesting.
A lot of things are assuming you might be diabetic nowadays, or you can like click that box or whatever.
Yeah.
So how was your week?
Not a lot to talk about. My wife decided she was going to go ahead and download Sims 4.
Oh yeah.
And she's
and
not.
You haven't seen her since.
She's not that satisfied with the user interface. As I'm observing her playing, I feel like it was heavily, like more heavily than usual, focused in its design on, say, the PC gamer.
Ah.
And so the person using their controller, you know, has a little bit more difficult time getting the focus of the cursor or whatever and where you want it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, she loves the Sims. That's one of Sims 3 is one of the games that she's, you know, platinumed on or whatever. Yeah. She's enjoying it all right. It's kind of distracting her from Battlefront 2, which she was playing for a long time. You know, we've watched some movies, but I can never remember what they are. We did see that Sean Bean show. There's two seasons of it on Netflix, Frankenstein Chronicles.
Yes, and he doesn't actually die right up front, at least. How is that? Because I had just heard passings of it, and then the other night when I saw that there were 1,000 shows on Netflix, I actually watched like the trailer. Well, but it's like the hover over it trailer, I just have a lot of scenes. I still don't really know what it's about.
I'd say it's written fairly well, and it's acted fairly well, but it doesn't... The subject matter isn't very interesting to me, because the thing about the version of Frankenstein where, rather than like it is in the book, where he's creating life out of nothing, essentially, you know, in this show they go along with the idea that in the book he stitches
together.
It was
corpses, yeah.
Yeah, and Mary Shelley is a character in the story, and she's even... you know, saying that that's what she was thinking of when she wrote the story, which clearly is not true when you read the book. And that's fine if they want to...
I was thinking of a man named Boris Karloff.
and that's fine if they want to take that route. But it just doesn't interest me. Like, I don't see what's interesting about reanimating a corpse. To me, it's not that much different than if someone dies on the table and you resuscitate them. Not that interesting. Also, why do you have to stitch them together with other body parts? Why not just take the corpse as it is?
Yeah.
I don't get it. So any part of the story that relies...
You guys are hearing some weird background noise. Addy is on alert. High alert.
Any part of the story that relies heavily on me being engaged in that aspect of it, I'm just lost on it. And unfortunately, the story really does want you to, I don't know, be interested in that or grossed out by it or creeped out by it or something. And I'm not, so most of it's lost on me. But Sean Bean does a good job. Everybody else does a good job in it. I think the plot is pretty well written. The intrigues are pretty well written. We'll probably keep watching it through the second season, but I mean, if my wife said, you know what, I'm not interested in watching this, I don't think I would care.
Because
it's just that reanimating the dead plot. I mean, when I read a book where they reanimate like a mummy or something, that's more interesting to me because something about that makes more sense. Or, you know, it's the thing is 4,000 years old and that plays a part in it or whatever. But you're just taking someone that's recently died and you wake them up, basically. What's interesting about that?
Yeah.
To me, nothing. And stitching them together with other body parts, I don't even know why you do that. What's the point of that?
99% of all Bring Back the Dead stories don't interest me anymore. I don't know if I'd say always. Because to me, they are all the exact same story. Technically, there's a way to bring back the dead. When you do, they're kind of fucked up demons now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, and sometimes it's a slow burn to that. Sometimes it's just but it's always that. It's always, well, you can bring them back, but it kind of sucks.
But the early mummy stories weren't. What was interesting about bringing them back was that they were 4,000 years old, and they had, like, I think, I haven't read it, I haven't found it.
Yeah, because they're also always now loved ones or whatever. It's not even like we're going to, it's also, my wife died, and I want to bring her back, and then sometimes dead is better.
Yeah, whatever. But yeah, like, I think Poe, Edgar Allan Poe wrote a story kind of mocking these mummy stories where the mummy is woken up and then he's talking about things and he's sort of making fun of how things are today. I'd really love to read it. But that's, again, that's another example of the mummy that's revived isn't evil, there's nothing wrong with him. What's interesting about it is all the coming back, you know, from 4,000 years ago and having something interesting to say. And in the original, I call it the original, I don't know if it really is the original, but the Jane Webb story, that mummy that came back was you kind of thought he might be evil. Not in a, he came back from the dead and he's evil, but he's just...
He was evil to start with.
Yeah, he was a bad guy 4,000 years ago, and now he's a bad guy now. But you find out by the end of the story, spoilers, that he's actually repentant of all the evil that he did, and the only people he was really messing with were people who were today evil.
Yeah,
and he was trying to stop them from their evil. So that was kind of interesting how that all shaped up in that story. But yes, these days it's someone you love. You can't live without them. You have to have them back. They didn't die very long ago. You wake them up, and they come back, like you say, some kind of demon or monster or something, and well, I guess I shouldn't have done that. I mean, okay, this story's been told 1,000 times.
Weirdly, and don't get me wrong, there's so much else wrong with this show, but the sci-fi show Lex kind of took an interesting take on it, because basically the main character was an assassin for the big bad guy for a long time, and he was kept in suspended animation, and then they had this fake blood they would pump into him, and he'd come out, and he would kill for him. And he did this for so long, and spent most of his time just in a, like, just unconscious, that when he came out, like, it was thousands of years had gone by, and his entire home planet and species were gone. And he ends up becoming the main hero. And there's a lot of, what did I do under those conditions? Why did I do? Is it my fault? There's a lot of what the hell happens going forward. And actually, a major driver they used for the plot for a while was trying to find more of that fluid, because if he didn't have enough, he would die. Mm. And like I said, show has a lot of shit wrong with it. But that was an interesting take on the reviving dead thing, and it gave me something to think about. All the others are just Pet Cemetery.
Yeah, Pet Cemetery, right. No, you're
like,
right.
That's the most succinct version of the same story, but they're all Pet Cemetery.
Anyway, how was your week?
You pretty good. Have a lot of stuff to talk about. Not really. 93 hours into Andromeda. I'm getting down to like bits and pieces now, and like, oh, I really need more research points to finish this. And I feel like the game, I don't know if I talked about this before, I feel like the game was rushed at the end because the game is getting way more glitchy.
Mm.
And also, continuity errors are stronger mm-hmm. now, mm-hmm. where like I talk to somebody and they hate me. And then later a quest brings me back around to working with them and now we're friends. But once all that's done, if I come back and talk to them, they gave me the original I hate you speech mm. from before any of this mm. happened. That kind of thing. Or like, mm-hmm. you know, this person is dead now. What? You still work for her? That doesn't seem right to me, but I don't have any option to tell you, dude, I killed her. So, like, yeah. Some really, like... They really went for it this time on the choices. It's sort of Fallout-y in a way, but unlike Fallout, I feel like Fallout, you get screwed because you only have one of two choices, but you're like, but this is ridiculous. So these suck because it makes it more interesting, I guess. Like, Andromeda really has choices where I'm like, I can make arguments for both of this,
mm-hmm.
but I don't really like ones that are really stuck. And after reading an article talking about it, they're like, you know, and these, unlike in previous games, you can't like wait and do it later or whatever. You're stuck on that screen until mm-hmm. you decide. Mm-hmm. Once I realized that, I tried to limit how long I would let myself think about it because it was a role-playing game. Like, the person's standing there.
Sure.
The other people aren't going to be like, yeah, just hang out for 2 hours. That's fine. While
you consider it, yeah.
Yeah. So some stuff I'm like, ugh. And some stuff I'm still waiting to see how it plays out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I did look up something the other day because I had one quest that was just not getting started. And I looked up enough to see it say, oh, no, that comes through in the main storyline. You'll get to it. And I'm like, okay, don't need to know anymore. But I feel like I'm probably near the end. Things are starting to feel that way. But like I said, I'll easily break 100. I mean, that's 7 hours from now.
Mm.
So... still loving it. It still may end up being my favorite game, which is funny because I just saw something the other day of somebody complaining about it, I think. But love that game.
Well, my wife enjoyed it. Like, you know, again.
Yeah.
Maybe not as much as the other games, but did enjoy it. She started to play through again a second time. I don't know why she stopped.
I've been thinking about it. I don't know that that'll work because... I think most of the choices, if I would do them different, wouldn't matter that much. And the big ones, I'm like, I'm not sure I'm willing to change my mind on those. Because that is the thing. I don't know... I don't remember this being as intense before, but my ship crew are real characters, and like I care about them, and I'm convinced they have lives going on that I'm not involved with. Like... For me personally, they absolutely nailed it on these characters.
Well, they're very well written and developed and acted and everything. Yeah, very good.
And I just love hearing them talk amongst themselves.
Mm-hmm.
If you any of you haven't played, important advice, you have to switch out which squad mates you take with you a lot. Not because, like, you don't technically have to because the experience levels up, but because there is fascinating dialogue while you're driving around in the Nomad from any combination of two.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So much story did I get from just listening to them bitching in the back seat forever and ever.
I mean,
ever
they just put a lot of work into that.
And I don't know why, but every loyalty mission is really engrossing and hilarious. All the funny parts are in the loyalty missions. They crack me up. I'm kind of sad they're over. Yeah, I do not. I mean, it must have been really hella glitchy at the beginning. Because I love this game. It's a great game. Mm. And I like it better than the originals because I feel like it built off of what the originals had. So yeah, I don't know what other people... I'm still worried because I'm holding out for a romance with Suvi, but that has been stalled for a while. And I recently did the whole officially telling PB, let's just be friends. And now I'm like... I was kind of getting into PB a little bit. She grew on me after a while.
So the person who voices, I'm sorry, what's the redhead's name? Suvi?
Suvi, yes. The Irish one, yes.
Yeah, the person that voices her voices Kate in Fallout.
Really?
I always, don't you always hear Kate when you hear her talk?
No, because I hardly played with Kate.
Oh, okay.
I was really desperately focused on trying to make it with
Piper or
no, the online nerd chick in real life voiced a Brotherhood of Steel character.
Oh. I don't.
She's a Geek and Sundry person. The Guild.
Felicia Day?
Felicia Day voiced some character.
Who you can have a relationship with?
Yeah. It was a companion character, and you could. Except I couldn't, because. Wait, was Kate in New Vegas? I'm talking about New Vegas.
No.
She was in 3? She wasn't in 4, was she?
Fallout 4.
Oh, wow, then I really didn't play with her. No, I was talking about one from
Kate
New Vegas.
Kate was the one that you had to rehabilitate? She was a druggie.
Yeah. Okay. I did the basics, but I didn't spend a lot of time.
That's the same person voices her as
Vegas. That's interesting.
Yeah, Felicia Day is in... Is it New Vegas, I think.
It's definitely New Vegas.
Yeah.
Because New Vegas, one of my favorite games of all time, despite being the buggiest thing in existence, and one of the bugs made it so I couldn't trigger the quest that would start a romance with her.
I was mad.
And by then, I was too far gone to worry about it. I've been doing that lately, not having any romance in games with romances. I think that's what happened for me in Inquisition, Dragon Age Inquisition. By the end, I was like, I didn't really pursue anybody.
When my wife played New Vegas, and she finally ran into Felicia Day's character, she couldn't even get her to like go on missions with her or anything.
Yeah.
There was
a lot of bugs. And then just in the not buggy but annoying category, I know from a friend who played, if a male character hung out with her, or had her as a companion, and you know how you could actually like instruct them to do something?
Mm-hmm.
Her frequent response was something along the lines of, back off, I'm not into guys. Like, that was one that came up a lot.
Huh. That's interesting.
And he was like, dude, I just asked you to pick that thing up. Like, this is not... It was... And I remember when I first heard it, I was like, hey, that's empowering. But yeah, it's a common one that would come up. Because, no, you would hear her say it with NPCs, too. What were we talking about? Jesus Christ.
You're weak, basically. And so we started talking.
No, you're weak.
Yeah, but then I asked about yours.
I am strong.
And then I asked about yours, and you brought up your game.
I'm not weak. You're weak.
What else did you do?
We had to cancel our game because I was not feeling well. I had my monthly dinner with my friend. Out at Orchard Green. That was a pretty good one. Things didn't get too heavy, but we still talked about a lot of stuff. That was nice. Yeah, not too much else. We didn't really watch anything. Coco, the Pixar film, just recently hit on demand for our cable, so I think we're going to watch that. Because everybody says that's phenomenal.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And I had such good luck with Moana.
So did you hear that they're talking with Kristen Wiig to see if she'll play Cheetah?
I saw that. To me, that's like such an early thing that I was like, cool, and I moved on. Like, I didn't read any of the stuff about it.
I mean, yeah, it could easily not happen. Yeah. Or even be wrong.
And that's the thing. Nowadays, they're like so early.
Yeah.
They'll report stuff. A person who might moderately be involved in this has said this random thing. I'm not even exaggerating. That happens. In an interview, this guy who's friends with the writer of the movie said, oh yeah, they're putting so-and-so in. Like, and then we run that for like 2 days.
People just seem to be so scared they're going to get scooped on something that they just have to say, well, I guess we'll talk about this because everyone else is going to talk about it, and then everybody will wonder why we're not talking about it.
100%.
But then they're not embarrassed later when it turns out to be nothing.
Yeah. It depends on how much outcry there is. If enough people yell, then they're embarrassed. Speaking of which, it looks like Trish and I are going to the march on the 23rd in D.C.
So you're going to ride a bus out there or something? Wow.
Yep. There's always, at any of these, there's always somebody in Iowa City who charters a bus and sells seats. So
it's going to be a long ride.
It's going to be a long fucking weekend. Mm-hmm. I'm actually kind of scared about the entire process because basically we'll leave a little before 5 p.m. on Friday, and then just drive straight and get there at 10:45 on Saturday. And then at 6:45 on Saturday, we get back on the bus, drive straight through back on Sunday at noon.
Boy.
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely freaked out. But I feel like it's that important. Like, that's the thing. This whole thing, I was like, oh, shit. But I'm like, nope. This is one of those for me. Like, this is huge. And this is too important. So
this doesn't seem like, though, something that you would have thought twice about doing 5 years ago.
No. I wouldn't have thought twice about doing it 5 years ago. I've never... It is only in very recent years that I've actually done any sort of activism. Because before then, I was just too not into it. I don't like the community angle, so I don't want to mess with that kind of stuff. No, I would not have considered this for a second 5 years ago. And that's the other thing I've discovered, is that there are... Not all my causes are equal. There are two or three things that I'm like, those are most important to me. And they tend to tie around feminism, LGBT rights, and gun safety, or gun control. I gotta be honest here. I'm gonna put this one out here. I'm not saying this is my plan to push for this or anything. I understand there. I don't believe my wife even agrees with me on this. So I'm certainly not going to start any campaign to make this happen. But I would be cool with just outlawing guns in this country.
Like
in Australia.
Like repealing the Second Amendment or keeping the Second Amendment?
I don't care.
Okay.
But doing it however, so we just, guns were illegal. I would be totally fine with that.
Okay.
I know that's not going to happen, and I know a lot of people that disagree, and I know that just inflames NRA people, oh, take away our guns. And I'm not saying I'm going to try and make that happen. I'm saying, you know what, I would be cool with that. So anything before that in terms of gun control is fine with me.
And why? I mean, what do you think that would achieve to do that?
Much fewer gun deaths. Kind of like in the other countries in which they're illegal.
Sure, but there's still, I mean, homicide rates overall don't necessarily go down. In fact, in many places they don't go down. I mean, people just kill each other with other things.
I'd rather that.
Okay.
I have always had a philosophical opposition to guns.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you often see these headlines that say, you know, well, they took guns out of this thing and it reduced gun violence. But, I mean, when you think about it, of course that happened. If you take baseball bats out of a place, you're going to reduce baseball bat violence. But I do understand if people say, yeah, that's right, William, but gun violence I find more abhorrent than other types of violence. Yes. And not only that, but some people, their argument is, well, I don't feel like I can stop baseball bat violence, but I feel like I can stop gun violence. You see what I'm saying? So, I mean, if...
Or, depending on your phrasing, the other way around, I feel like I could stop somebody who tries to walk into a school with a baseball bat and kill a bunch of kids.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't feel like I could stop somebody with a gun.
Very good.
I'd try, but I like to think I'd try.
But, what was I going to... That's a very interesting argument and approach. And I think you're also correct in pointing out that you could go for that result without really challenging the Second Amendment per se.
Well, and I mean that's sort of the point of it. I'm like, I don't care. I just would like that. But I'm totally down with these ideas of, you know, universal background checks, stronger restrictions on who can and cannot for whatever reason, closing the gun show loophole, huge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that's a great start, and that seems to be what a lot of, you know, like, responsible gun... Here's the funny thing. That appears to be what the majority of NRA members would like, but that's not what the NRA says they would like. The NRA, insofar as it is an entity, is not okay with that. But if you talk to individual members, they are, and in many cases aren't aware that the NRA isn't.
Yeah, well.
Okay, this is depressing. Let's pull something out of the hat. Okay. We're running out of time anyway. We gotta do that.
I find myself thinking more about how to reduce violence in our country in general, because it's a real problem.
And I'm just so horrified by this constant cycle of do nothing and thoughts and prayers and all. I'm like, no. Do something. Even if you do something that makes it worse, try something, goddammit. But don't try something that makes it worse, please.
But we do want this to stop, of course. Yeah. And I think everybody feels that way. Beth.
Oh, Beth Blanco, the famous Monco.
A.K.A. Betty White.
Yes.
I love that. Betty okay. White. Is pizza a sandwich? This question divided my office for weeks. Pizza?
I hope you eventually, like, wiped out the employees that were... How is that even, like... At that point, just anything associated with bread is pizza.
Well...
It's a sandwich. So if you run over a piece of white bread with your car and the tire is still on the bread, it's now a sandwich.
Well, really, though, if pizza is a sandwich, then if I take a piece of bread and spread butter on it, then that's a butter sandwich.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. If you take a piece of bread and spread motor oil on it, this is a motor oil sandwich at that point.
You don't have to have two pieces?
This is what I'm saying, if we let pizza in.
If we let pizza in.
That's a huge... I feel like there are a variety of reasons why it's not a sandwich. But the primary one is... That it doesn't have a top. And you'll note, any other time they don't have a top, we have to call it an open-faced sandwich. But that's a special circumstance. Every open-faced sandwich has a non-open-faced version. Trish's phone, dude.
Baby, your phone's gone crazy. It's like really going crazy, though.
It's probably in the bag with the piping on it.
It stopped.
Alright. It stopped, I guess. That's fine. But yeah, like, I mean, the nature of...
Well, the thing is, as I was growing up, pizzas were, if they were compared to anything, it would be pie.
A pie, a pizza pie.
Pizza pie, yeah.
Now, I'm not
and sometimes
sure
they even very much resembled pies because they were deep dish or they, you know, yeah. They actually looked a little pie-like.
And it gets weird because, like, there's some food in Japan that they call the Japanese pizza now. And, like, in certain anime, if it involves it, like, the English translation will say pizza even. And it's not. Because the Japanese have pizza. They eat a lot of pizza. It's a different thing. It's called a omagaki or something. I don't know. But it's just an older traditional thing that was like, you know, baked dough with some shit on the top of it. and they call that pizza. And I'm like, that's terrible. Well, why can't it be its own thing? But pizza, I mean, the sandwich. Ask yourself if you're a fancy English nobleman addicted to gambling. What would you be okay with eating while sitting at the card table? Oh my God, this is the answer. Why didn't I think of this before?
I don't know.
The answer. Pizza doesn't work because the whole point is he wants to hold it in his hand, one hand. Like, it has to have a top and a bottom. But I think it absolutely lets the hot dog in because that would totally work.
It served the same purpose.
Yeah, exactly. But not pizza, I don't think.
Unless he folded it over, but then it'd be a calzone.
There's a whole... Did you watch Parks and Rec?
No. I did watch it, but I don't remember.
There's a whole arc
talking about that.
Involving that Adam Scott's character, like, really is into calzones and gets really mad when other people are like, isn't it just pizza? Like, it becomes a whole thing for seasons.
I do remember that. Like, he makes them and stuff, right?
Well, he does... Well, he makes... Well, yeah, there's one point where he's going to start a business... Of them.
Well, wasn't there an episode where when a person's running for office, their spouse competes in some baking contest or whatever?
I could believe that.
And
Leslie
was running. And
yeah,
so,
she was
so,
definitely running.
So now of the first, he as a it was going to be the first man to compete. And I think he made calzones or wanted to make calzones because it was pie was what they usually make.
All right.
But he wanted to make calzones.
I did not see that or hear of that,
right.
But that...
I think that's right.
If that's not it, you're writing spec scripts for Parks and Rec in your sleep or something. Because that is an incredibly Parks and Rec-y episode right there.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the pizza sandwich thing? I'm just like, well, your eyes said you couldn't believe it was a question when you were reading it.
That is true. But I mean, usually on questions like this, I always come around to People can call whatever they want. I don't care. Would I consider it a sandwich? No, because in my mind, it's a pie, if it's anything.
They're right, yeah.
And it's not even that, really. It's just...
more of a tart.
Yeah, I guess more pizza tart.
Pizza tart.
But, yeah, a sandwich is farthest from my mind. But it's nothing to... Why would people argue about it? I don't know.
Oh, we talked about this.
We talked about this with the hot dog and sandwich.
When it doesn't matter, people can get really the fuck into it. And I like that because it's much more fun than when like it does matter.
And because there's no stakes, but you can get as worked up as you want. And
so I ended up watching a thing when I was homesick twice, and then I watched it. I made Trish watch it later that night. And this makes me think of it a little bit because it was something that was like racist accidentally, but it was so badly done that like it kind of wasn't offensive. Greg Davis, who's a comedian, a British comedian I see on a lot of these panel shows, and I really like him, did this bit on that Countdown show. He was the like stand-in comedian, and so he had this whole bit where he talked about it. He used to be a teacher, and he taught drama and English for many years. And he talked about one time he got Chris Eubanks Jr., the British boxer, to come and be a motivational speaker for the kids. And he did this 3.5-hour speech that was mostly these loose anecdotes peppered with odd poems that he himself had written that he would shout in the kids' faces. But in the process, and here's the thing you have to know about Chris Eubanks Jr., he has a very weird accent. His voice, it's a little bit like a British version of like Mike Tyson. Because he's kind of up like this, and there's a weird sort of speech impediment. It's very weird. But Greg Davis said this experience made him realize that he can't do impressions normally, but he can do a really good Chris Eubanks one. And then a lot of classic literature sounds much more interesting when done his voice. And so he proceeded to do this, and everybody's losing their mind. And they're like, it's so bad. And at one point, one of them is like, if Chris Eubanks was in the audience right now, he wouldn't even be offended. But what's really fun is he started the whole thing by saying, I just want to let you guys know that my agent and every member of production on the show that I've spoken to thinks this is a terrible idea. And afterwards, when they were like, it really was bad, and he's like, I swear to you, 2 hours ago, I'm on the phone with my agent, and he's like, but do you really think the accent's good enough? And I was, Tony, was just very, I'm like, because that is sort of the joke. It's kind of racist, but I'm like, but he sucks at it really bad. And like, and to be fair, everybody on the show was white. But I'm like, it's another one of those, I'm like, can I find this? And the problem is, I always find funny voices funny.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Which means I find so many racist accents to be funny. And I shouldn't, but it's just, to me, it's just a weird voice, you know? And I always think those are hilarious. But I was kind of torn, and I'm like, and he knew. And I do think it's like, if Chris Eubanks, he would, because it just sounded so not like him. And see, I love that. Yeah, I love that. This happens with you and I, but not as often, you know, like heterosexuals make really good coffee. But I do wonder, because in my gaming group it'll happen. And every once in a while we're like, okay, did that go too far? So it gets a little weird sometimes.
Heterosexuals do make the best.
Great coffee.
That was like an early podcast, right? Was that the title of the podcast, even?
Eventually, yes, because that broke me when you came up with that.
Oh, I came up with that, okay.
Yeah, you did. I don't... We were talking something... We switched it around, and we were doing, like, heterophobic sort of jokes.
Right.
And just as we're ending, you're like, they make some good coffee, though. And then I fell over, and I think had, like, 20 minutes of dead silence punctuated by wheezing laughter from me. So it absolutely had to be...
I remember that now, yeah.
The title.
I don't know what that was about.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember how that started, but originally it was something else, and then you were like, just barely, just like, I almost didn't hear it. You're like, make some damn good coffee, though.
Those were the days.
Yep. Yeah, I was mostly just killing time because we don't have more time for another question.
We don't? Okay.
I don't think so. Sorry. Movies are showing up soon. Do you think you'll see Red Sparrow?
I doubt it. I mean, we might. Because my wife is kind of a fan of Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah. I am too. I was just talking with somebody today, but she doesn't necessarily have the best taste in projects. She's amazing, but she picks some stuff that I'm like,
Well, you know, that. And speaking of that, and I mentioned Kristen Wiig before for being possibly being cast as Cheetah. A lot of people are objecting to it, saying, well, she's a comedian, you know, and we want this to be a serious thing. It's like, well, didn't you see Kristen Wiig in Mother? She was in that, and she wasn't funny.
Well, yeah, a lot of us did not see Mother.
Well, it was...
Well, but she's done other stuff. She's had a couple of her own
things.
Sure,
but...
She's done some dramatic performances.
And people think that if she tries to be dramatic or sexy, for example, because some people think, well, that Cheetah is going to be is a sexual or a sexy yeah. character or whatever, that it just won't work. But, I mean, she wasn't in Mother very much, but you didn't think she was about to crack a joke or something.
Yeah.
I mean, it worked. She was just fine like any other actor. She can clearly act, so I don't know why people...
I think she would be totally capable of doing a dramatic performance.
Absolutely.
That being said, if you tell me Kristen Wiig playing Cheetah... I picture something that looks like a side character in a Zoolander movie, because I could also see her doing that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's my concern. Could directors see her doing that?
But I mean, Jamie Foxx played a bad guy in one of the Spider. It was a bad Spider-Man movie, but
yes.
He did fine.
No, and Jamie Foxx has proven his dramatic chops.
Well, yeah.
No, but Kristen Wiig absolutely could. Whether or not she'd be allowed to, I don't know.
Well, when I heard, I thought, I like Kristen Wiig.
I
think she could do this. I don't have any problem with it. But a lot of people were complaining, and I thought all their complaints were weird and not very valid.
Like to complain, the internet.
Including people thinking that, oh, no, Cheetah should be, you know, similar complaints that they had about Gal Gadot and, you know, oh, she's not shapely enough or she's not whatever.
Yeah thinking, fuck those people.
What is wrong with you people?
Fuck those people.
That's ridiculous.
On a couple different levels, but yes. And then the week after that, Wrinkle in Time comes out. Please let that be good.
Yeah, I really hope that's good too.
That's a pivotal movie.
Yes, it is, and I've not been impressed with any of the trailers at all. But that doesn't mean the movie won't be good. And I hope that it is.
Something comes at the end of the tunnel. Well, and they just pushed up Infinity War.
Yeah, I heard that.
And just today.
Of course, we're really looking forward to Tomb Raider.
That was the other one. I was like, there's
weeks.
Two that I want to see. I saw this whole list of movies coming in March, and there were two that I cared about, and it was...
2 weeks away.
Wrinkle in Time and Tomb Raider.
We will see it early, I'm sure, and if my wife likes it, we'll probably see it often.
For the record, the reason I'm not interested in Red Sparrow, well, there's a few reasons I wasn't already, but I was getting a hint, and now I'm getting more hints, that there may be some disconcerting torture, rape stuff.
Yeah.
Again, if you have a female lead and she has to be strong, you have to prove that by just doing horrible shit to her all the time. And I was afraid that was going to come, and I'm like, that's not for me.
Well, and my wife and I aren't typically fans of... you know, quote unquote, strong female characters,
yep.
where part of their strength is they're seductive or they seduce the. We've seen that.
Yeah.
That's fine. We don't like object to other people making movies like that or liking it, but it doesn't do anything for us.
Yeah.
We want to see a character who's the female lead doing kick ass stuff. We aren't interested in seeing her seduce somebody.
Yeah.
Just not interested in it.
I do all my own seducing these days anyway. Alright, that's all the time we have for people, so go to the blog. It's been a little more active again, people saying things, talking about stuff, having discussions, sort of. Just check it out. Also, like us on Facebook. Also, send me money. Don't send William money, just send me money. And next week... Oh, there's Derby tomorrow night.
Is that right?
Saturday night.
Is that right?
I'm going to check that out. And we will talk to you guys next week.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.